Sex, death, hypochondria, paranoia, anxiety, and the pursuit of the perfect moment are some of Spalding Gray's obsessions. Spalding Gray distills the different chapters of his life into monologues that are both dark and comic. Gray is no longer a secret treasure known only to the experimental theater world. His monologue Swimming to Cambodia was made into a movie, and The Terrors of Pleasure was shown on HBO. Since appearing in David Byrne's movie True Stories, Gray is now also in more demand as an actor. And with his partner, Renee Shafransky, he's writing a new feature film set in Nicaragua. Last March, he left New York for Los Angeles for a residency at the Mark Taper Forum. It ends this week. He'd been to Los Angeles before, mostly to audition for TV parts that he wasn't sure he even wanted. As part of his residency, he wanted to do a piece that showed a part of Los Angeles that had nothing to do with the entertainment industry. He created a piece called L.A. The Other, Conversations With. His idea was to find a range of people, invite them to the theater, and interview them on stage. The only problem was it was hard to meet people in Los Angeles.
I never run into anyone on the streets. The idea of the piece was that I would meet people in a serendipitous, random fashion and then interview them. And I had this awful time finding people. I mean, I walk in my neighborhood and never run into anyone. The only time that we, and one of the most exciting times, was when the earthquake came. And I thought a bomb had gone off at first. And Renee said, quick, it's an earthquake. Stand under the door jamb. And I ran for the front door. There's no way I'm going to stand under the door jamb. And suddenly we're out on the front lawn, and there are all our neighbors in their underwear and in their pajamas, and we're all waving at them, and that was the big, I haven't seen them since. That was a big reunion day.
So you wanted to find people that you could interview for your monologue, L.A. The Other, and you said you had trouble running into people on the street. So what did you do to find people who you could talk to in this monologue?
It was a real project. We'd choose areas of town, like we'd go down to Skid Row with the street people that were, at the time, were living in boxes. Now they're living on Venice Beach in tents. But at the time, they were living in these crates and boxes, and I went down there and, talked with some of them. Well, it was very hard to pin them down as to, when will you be available? How can we pick you up? Where will you be on the 7th of January? And I can remember once we were walking in Venice Beach, and I came up to this guy with an incredible homemade turban that had all these crystals on it, and he was called Sonny Zorro, the King of Venice. And we said, look, we want you to come on and be interviewed on stage. Yeah, this isn't a surprise to him. Would you be on this bench here on the boardwalk on the 7th at 7? Can you remember those two sevens? And he was there. I went to the Braille Institute because I was interested in talking with a blind person, how they deal with Los Angeles. And I'd go to different, institutions, from schools to senior citizens, Oasis Center, and that, rarely on the street.
What kinds of questions did you ask in your performance to the people who you brought there to be interviewed?
One of the criticisms, in three papers, the reviews have been very good in two of them, and then there was the LA Weekly that said, he wasn't talking about Los Angeles. No, well, I wasn't. I was talking to people that live in Los Angeles about mainly coping. I think they are coping questions. They're questions about systems of belief. What do you do to get through the day? When did you last laugh? Do you go to see the movies? Why? I mean, meaning. What meaning do people find in their lives? Are we on this earth to suffer or enjoy, or a little bit of both? And I would often say things like, recently I've heard that the earth is a penal colony for sinners from other galaxies, one great Australia. What do you feel about that? What was the last fight you had with your neighbors? This kind of just detail life questions.
Do you think it worked? Were you happy with it?
On the whole, yes. But it is a thing that worked in that particular space, in this particular time, in this city. I don't think it's a thing that's translatable, but I was much happier than I thought I would be with it.
I've seen you in two kinds of roles. One is playing yourself, doing a monologue that you've written, and the other is playing a role in somebody's movie or television series, and these roles have ranged from being in David Byrne's movie, which I just blanked out on the title of.
True Stories.
To having a role on Spencer for Hire on television as a bank swindler, as I recall. Can you compare the experience of playing a role in a movie, playing somebody else's role, to playing yourself in a monologue?
Doing the role in the movie, first of all, Spencer for Hire, that was one experience that taught me never to do television again. role that I think I've done furthest from myself was in Stars and Bars, that will be coming out in Columbia Pictures in the spring, starring Harry Dean Stanton and Daniel Day-Lewis. And that, I was playing a small cameo role of a kind of demented Southern reverend there. And I got into outfits there. That helped. I remember they outfitted me in polyester and white shoes, and I grew a little goatee and had my hair slicked back. And that was fun. That was like a holiday, because I was getting away from myself. And I would like to do more of that, and like to do a larger role so I can get into kind of character study. I miss that. I did all of that in college, and there's an art in that, and there's a craft in that that I'm really rusty at. And a part of me wants to be a writer, but another part wants to get back to that acting. I'm very split. For instance, the most recent thing I did was Clara's Heart, Whoopi Goldberg's new film. We were shooting it. It's a rather serious film for her, a Mark Medoff script. And we were shooting it in the Eastern Shore of Maryland, and I was playing a New Age grief counselor. And I can remember what happened was that my name was Peter, and I was supposed to be real positive and, you know, based in San Francisco. And there was this beautiful speedboat at the dock that was a prop for the film. And this guy was going to take it around the point to the next location in Chesapeake Bay. And I asked him if I could ride with him because I had the afternoon off. And he said it was only an hour. But this guy, he didn't have a good sense of time and space. Not only was it 3 hours, but he got lost. And the waves were coming over this boat and soaking me. And I was supposed to do a big scene the next day. And I got scrunched down, S. Baldwin Gray. I went through this terrific hypochondria, and he kept saying to me, I hope you don't catch cold. I said, yeah, you and me both. By then, I was sopped through. I was sopped through to the skin, and I had the chills, and the waves were broadsiding this boat. It was really quite a scary experience. And at some point in the boat, I decided to take on the character of Peter, the one that I was supposed to be studying, the New Age grief counselor. And I just expanded my chest and opened up and let the salt burst over my head. And I was fine. You know, I was getting into character. In that boat, I got into character.
You know,
so that's fun.
This leads to a new concept. Maybe you can lead classes in acting therapy, where you take on the persona of someone who could get you through a tough experience.
Well, now, don't get me started, Terry, because, you see, I could go that route, too. I could write a book about that, and sure, you know. I have never been aware. I was never aware of possibilities until quite late in my life, with possibilities of a variety of things to do. Up until I was about 35 or so, I just thought it was just theater and acting, and now it's going in many directions.
Do you think you'll be staying in Los Angeles?
We are going to Russia, Renee and I, on the 16th of February, if you can imagine, Russia in February. We are taking our film, Swimming to Cambodia, to the first American film festival in Russia, in Moscow and Leningrad. And a Russian is going to be speaking my lines.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, this is going to be an unbelievable experience.
Oh, it really will.
I mean, I just can't believe it. So we're going to Russia, and then I have to return to the East Coast in March and April because I'm going to the McDowell Colony up in New Hampshire to try to isolate myself to write this book, this book that I'm actually writing, the first written book I've ever done for Knopf, called Impossible Vacation.
Let me ask you, now that you have so many things going, I remember a time when you wanted all these roles and it wasn't happening, and now I'm sure you're having to turn things down. You're getting so many offers. Do you still wake up every day and worry about death?
Oh, yes. Funny you should ask that. More than ever.
Why?
I don't know why. It's a very difficult monologue that I'm working on now at the Taper. It is a monologue based on the material that I'm working on in the book, which is the exploration of what I would call my personal shadow. And it works with the concepts of the idea of self-destruction and the way that we, or I, create, in the face of pleasure, our own little hells to short-circuit the pleasure. And the monologue is about trying to take a vacation, and it keeps working back and working back and working back to an exploration, finally, of my mother's suicide. So it's a rather heavy monologue, and I'm working with a therapist here privately in tandem with making the monologue. So I would guess that was, at this point, some of the reasons.
So you think maybe you're short-circuiting your pleasure?
I know I am. I know I am. Because it's very difficult out here, because you're not aware of short-circuiting your pleasure in New York City. Here, when you wake up and the birds are singing and the sun is out and it is beautiful, you just think, well, I have no right to think about death, you know? So then it gets a little bit double-bind, if you know what I mean.
Spaulding, thanks a lot for doing the interview.
Oh, you're welcome.
Spaulding Gray spoke to us from the NPR Bureau in Los Angeles. This is Fresh Air.